And welcome into ABW Radio, everybody. I am your friendly American, the Colonial Cannon. I am Jason Schrader, and I'm joined by an esteemed panel today. We're going Oreo style, and I will be your cream filling. As we have joining us from London, it's that London guy, Carl. Carl, how
Hello.
Are you today?
I'm all good, Jason. How are you?
You know, we're here today. Some bittersweet feelings, but I'm sure you're sharing that. We'll get into that here in a second. Also joined from lovely New York City, it's our good friend Andrew Thompson, AFC BVB, whatever it is on Twitter. Andrew, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Nice to be back.
Yeah, good to have you on. Glad to be on with you two guys. You guys are some of my favorites on here. Unlike other gingers, I'm not calling anybody out, Josh. But yeah, no. So here we are. It's after a decent win here, and you know, a win that sees us claim fifth. We knew exactly what we had going into the match. Had to have some help from Agent Chambers, who wasn't able to pull it off anymore, or pull it off today for us. But we got the 3 points. We did what we had to. Maybe a little late, but nice to sort of end the season at least with 3 points. And we'll just get sort of straight into it, guys. Andrew, I'm going to come to you first. Starting lineups, not a ton of surprises, but Mustafi seems was a little ill, and so Gabriel comes in. But when you saw that, obviously barring the Mustafi news, was it a surprise at all? Was it what you expected? Would you rather have seen maybe Giroud play up front?
No. Not at all. No, I think it's fine. I think the 11 was basically what most people would have expected, to be honest with you. And I think it delivered on the end of the day. I mean, obviously going into the match, everyone was going to have maybe some reservations with Gabriel getting the start, considering some of the mixed bag performances he's put in lately. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's pretty horrific. So I thought he did pretty well, actually. It's a shame he had to go off injured, and it looks like he's not going to be available for the FA Cup final either. As well as Koscielny. We'll go into that later, I'm sure. But you know, on the whole, I thought the performance on the whole was quite good. I mean Everton made it incredibly easy for us in our first two goals. They were at sixes and sevens at the back. Maybe, you know, the wing backs were pressing and the center backs weren't, you know, they weren't getting a ton of support from midfield oftentimes. But we had some chances and we took them, and I think that's the difference in the end of the day. Everton had their chances as well, a lot of half chances from crosses. They maybe could have gotten a second if they had a bit more end product, but it's another 3 points. You know, it's five on the spin, but, you know, again, that's something we'll talk about later as well, is that it's too little too late yet again. We missed out on Champions League, so it's a good performance, and I think it gives more evidence as to why maybe – three at the back could be a viable option going into next season. But I do think it's also the jury might also still be out of it, considering, you know, the majority of the matches we played with three at the back were against teams that made it a little bit easy for us. As some say, they were on the beach, a couple of those teams. So, but I think they've looked good. I think we've been getting better performances, especially from Sanchez and Ozil. I think they showed that yet again today. So, there's a lot of positives in it, but you know, we'll see what happens going to the summer with a lot of questions around the club, a lot of the personnel, but I'm happy with 3 points.
Yeah, three points. And again, played some good football today as well, with the lineup. Carl, Hector Bellerin, who we're going to come on again here in a minute, again, out on the right. Ox, obviously not in the lineup with a little injury there. Despite having to have surgery on his ankle coming up, he's actually the last two games he's sort of come into his own a little bit more, and it sort of goes into my feeling and thinking of you come in for one or two games and you're going to be a little rusty. You start to get some more match fitness in you and a little more of that game crispness, and not just the goal, but I think overall today he had a really good performance. And it's been nice to see somebody come in for Ox on that right side and be able to attack and defend without really us losing too much. How did you feel, sort of, especially the last couple of games where he started? How did you feel seeing him in the lineup?
The formation suits him. we all know that he is someone who likes to get forward. I don't think that his defending is the best in the world. It really isn't. But because his recovery pace is so good, he's able to get forward and get back really, really quickly. So the formation, I think, suits him. It suits a lot of our players in our team. Just him at the moment is really doing wonders for him. I think having to get up and down that wing harder in our 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 formation was much harder for him. And I think now, as his starting position is a bit higher up the pitch, that suits him better because he can sort of close people down better, and he's not left in one-on-one situations, which he was left in quite a few times towards the beginning of the season. So at the moment, the formation is suiting him, and hopefully the formation that we play, it continues, because it suits a lot of our players in our team. We are playing well, and we've got options as well. Hopefully Ox does stay, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But the problem is, not the problem, the good thing is we have options in all areas of the pitch, maybe apart from one or two. So whereas I think Bellerin, and I think the pressures off him as well, I think once, especially during that sort of Crystal Palace game, you could tell that the pressure was really, really on him. And when he's obviously not someone who deals with pressure a lot or deals with it very well. So he's taken out the firing line, just like Iwobi was for a little while, and he's come back in. It's almost like a new lease of life. He's come back in and it's all different for him. And, you know, it was only two or three games that he's played in this position at the present, but he's been playing well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think he has been hampered a little bit by the ankle. I know he's going to have to get surgery here in the offseason. I've even been of the thought that he should be probably set down for the rest of the year. But he wasn't, and he's come in the last, especially the last few games, and played really well in Ox's absence. And I know Ox is going to be a big hit if he does leave. We'll sort of shift that towards the back burner and get back to that here in a little while. Let's go ahead and get into just into the first half. And I think we started off really brightly, and I'm going to actually come back to you on this as well, Carl. We started off really well and really sort of attacking them down that right-hand side of the pitch. But it was kind of apropos that down the left-hand side with Ozil, he was able to get to the byline and get a pullback. And then even though Welbs got credit for the assist, I think, because he did touch the ball, I'm giving that to Ozil in my mind. But, yeah, talk us through that first goal and just sort of what was going through your mind at that point. Because at that point, the car thieves from up north still hadn't scored yet. So we technically, according to the live table at the time, were sitting in fourth place.
Yes, Ozil, that wasn't a Welbeck assist. How Welbeck missed that, I'm sorry, it's ridiculous. And I, for one, I was watching it on the stream, and when he missed that, I was going mad. But obviously, Bellerin put it in, and it was like, it's like, oh, you fuck, yeah! Like, literally, like, the change of emotions in about four seconds was just ridiculous. No, but brilliant work from Ozil to pull it back. Credit to him. You know, it's what he does. He assists goals. And on his day, Ozil is brilliant. He's almost untouchable, but on his day, he can be bad as well. But let's stick to the positives. At the moment, he was just brilliant today. Well, in certain aspects, but he was very, very good today. His finishing needs to be a lot to be desired. But the pullback was brilliant. Welbeck had a I don't know, his finishing wasn't the best, and you know, people are saying that it's an assist, and it really wasn't. It was a total miss kick. But lucky that Bellerin's there, and this is what I'm talking about, the formation, because if we was playing four at the back, Bellerin wouldn't be that high up the pitch. He just wouldn't. But because his starting position is a bit higher, he's able to get forward a bit more, and sometimes his crossing and his finishing could be a bit erratic. But today, you know, just foot down, head over the ball, laced it into the goal, 1-0. And at that time, everyone was sort of jumping for joy. I think deep down, we probably knew that Liverpool would score at some point. But at the end of the day, we were optimistic, because we were doing the job that we need to do. We had to depend on other people, but at that present in time, we had a job to do, which was we had to win the game. And with that Bellerin chance, we were doing what we needed to do and winning.
Yeah, Carl, again, an unexpected place in Hector Bellerin and Carl Andrew. I was looking at Carl when I said that. Obviously unexpected he comes in and he's able to put performances like this in, even injured. I know there's been some talk of, you know, Barca DNA, quote unquote, starting to fly by, but he seems to sort of enjoy himself in London. Seems to really like the area. Seems to really get on with his teammates as well. Do you see anything to the Barca DNA? Do you think he's one of those players who we may see shipped off, and maybe not this summer, but in the next summer, going back to the boyhood club, who we tend to get a lot of people from there, sadly.
I think there's always going to be a link, and Chris can tell you, one of our colleagues at Football Hipsters Podcast has his hands in all matters Barca, and he knows for a fact that Barca that there is genuine interest for him this summer. But at the moment, I think, you know, he's first choice at the club right now. In theory, from a playing standpoint, if he wants to continue to get looks at for the Spanish national team, as long as he's playing football, then that's going to help him. The issue then becomes if he feels that he can't really elevate his game to the next level without, say, Champions League football, if this becomes a habit, say next season we don't make Champions League again, then you might have to really consider the fact that he might want to leave.
How dare you consider that option?
At that point, I think it would just be a matter of fact of life, potentially. He seems to be quite happy here, though. At least that's what he projects. So for the moment, we don't have to worry about it. But down the road, if this becomes somewhat of a more regular occurrence, then you would have to maybe think about that. It could actually potentially happen. But for the moment, I don't think we should really be concerned.
Gotcha. Good way to start the day as well. A nice sort of early goal there. I think it was like on the I didn't put the time down, but it was like in like the first 6 or 7 minutes there. Really nice. And then the next 6 or 7 minutes went by, and then a very silly thing was done by a very experienced player. And I think we saw the Koscielny of old sort of come out today. And I thought he had been sort of more disciplined this season. I was thinking that a couple of games ago that it's nice that he seems to have learned from some of his rashness in the past. But Drew, I'm going to stay with you, and the tackle that Koscielny put in, a bit reckless, wouldn't you say?
It's reckless, but for me, it's more stupid. When you look at the play unfold, there's no way he's going to intercept Enner Valencia in time, who does have a bit of pace about him. So an experienced center back should know, they should be able to judge the play a little bit better, and know that if there's even the inkling of a chance that I won't get there in time to put the tackle in, then you adjust your run to shield Valencia from being able to cut inside and turn that run into something bigger. He's lunged into the tackle. He's gone studs up. He came from up to down. So he started in the air and went down with the studs. He was late. It's a straight red. I have no issues with him being sent off. I just have an issue that I just think it's stupid from someone who, as experienced as he is, should know a little bit better. Maybe it was a little bit of a rush of blood to the head potentially, but I don't think that's really an excuse. I think you expect better from your center back leader in situations like that. And, you know, on a different day, maybe against a different side, him being sent off could have punished us. And I think we're lucky it didn't. But yeah, no, it was reckless, but for me, it was just more stupid than anything else, obviously.
Yeah, I know. When I saw it, I was just like, oh, especially with, obviously you see anything in slow motion, you're going to do it. But seeing it, I watched it happen in real time, and then seeing the replay, and I was just like, God, there's no defending that. You completely, completely gave the referee only one decision there. Carl, any differing thoughts on that? Maybe should it have just been a yellow? We've seen challenges like that put in on Arsenal players early in matches, and they've only resulted in yellow cards. Or do you sort of agree with the straight red decision there?
He wasn't even a foul. No, I'm joking. It was a straight red. It's indefendable. It really is. It was a straight red. Yeah. Reckless and stupid. I think Drew summed it up just perfectly. It really was. You know, he's our captain, he's our leader, and you go and make a challenge like that, reckless and stupid, just ridiculous. You got to be smart as a footballer. We was 1-0 up at the time. I don't think he was the very last man. So, I don't know, it's very, very stupid. And I think the consequences is, yes, he was sent off for this game and you get a game, but I think going forward, he's at the FA Cup final. And I think that's more harmful than anything. Yesterday, you know, if we had lost the game today and Liverpool had won, it wouldn't have been that much detriment, because let's face it, Liverpool always going to beat Middlesbrough at home. It was inevitable. But I think going forward, I think it's going to be more hurtful him missing in the FA Cup final, especially if Gabriel is not going to be fit as well. Yeah. You're thinking of three centre-backs of Holding. Hopefully, Mustafi is going to be back, and maybe Per. Do you know what I mean? And Per, who has played precisely, 10 minutes of football for the whole season, and you're going to go throw him into an FA Cup final?
Oh, he got like 30 minutes in today. He got 30 minutes.
Honestly, at that point, we should revert back to a back four at that point. I'd rather risk going back to a back four than playing an out-of-fit Mertesacker against Hazard, who would look to target his inability to be mobile. Same thing with Diego. Costa. We'll give him, you know, kind of a.
Of course, they're going to target. They're going to target her. That's what
I think what you would probably just end up doing is slotting Nacho into that left center back position,
and then
you could still put Gabriel and Holding, or Holding Gabriel in the center, and then the right slot.
Gabriel's fit,
Gabriel, but Mustafi, if he's.
But that's if Gibbs is fit as well, because Gibbs was out today as well. So if Gibbs is fit, so there's a load of.
Iwobi could play on the left. I don't think he would be as good defensive. I know that people laugh at that, but Iwobi has played there in the past, and if he's not having to cover one person and he's just having to track back a little bit more, I think it could be better. My problem with play going to a back four is we don't ever play a back four, because we still push our two quote unquote fullbacks. They still play as wingbacks. That's why we transition to a back three, is to have one extra person back there. Trying to shore that up, and we can still push those players on, and they can still have a little more cover. I think that's where my thought is there. So yeah, Cause moving on. I know a lot of people in the chat box have said sell him. He's been really out of form this season, and he has made some mistakes, but he hasn't had the card accumulation that we've seen in the past, which has been good. I still think he's a good center back. I think our problem is as a team, is we don't play well defensively as a team, and then that way your individual mistakes get highlighted, where I think other teams play a little more defensively as a team, and those individual mistakes aren't as highlighted, and it makes defenders look a little better. I think we leave ourselves out to dry a little too much. Let's move on after that. So we're down to 10 men now, and I thought, like, okay, we're just going to sort of sit back here. But we did not sit back at all. Drew Sanchez and Welbeck, and we're going to talk about individual players a little later, but I think Welbeck had a pretty decent game today. Welbeck, every Everton player thought he was offside. Welbeck knew he was onside. The linesman knew he was onside, thank goodness. And he did what you're taught to do at the earliest stage, and you play through the whistle. And he was able to get himself in a good position, and then get a nice pullback for Sanchez for the second goal. What were your thoughts on that, and how atrocious was it? If you're combing there, looking at your defense in that situation.
Well, again, I think, like I said before, I think we can thank Everton for being incredibly disorganized in the middle. You had three players, you know, come step to one, and then Welbeck gets through. He passed Wilbur's, but then no one picked up that late runner. And that just signals that it was poor communication at the back. So the keeper, the center backs, I think they weren't on the same page. It's a good thing that, you know, obviously Sanchez is intelligent enough to make that run, to see the open space in front of him. He likes to do that. It was a bit of a gift, obviously, but, you know, no one can argue with it. I thought Welbeck did very well. I think this is why people wanted him to be featuring at center forward more often, because he has that bit more of mobility than Giroud would have. I think if you swap places and Giroud is in Welbeck's place there, you don't get the chance that we just had. Sometimes just hard work and going direct will open up chances moving forward. And I think that's one of those instances that I think, and Welbeck showed in the latter stages of the match moving forward throughout the 90 minutes, that his movement, again, it got him a few more looks at goal. I know he didn't find him back of the net, but Again, his movement up front caused a very immobile and upset about Perrin that lack pace. It caused them issues, and I think that's why people are, have been calling from the start. If they're not going to play Perez, then you have to go with Welbeck, and I think it paid dividends today for sure, and especially in that second goal as well.
Yeah, any thoughts on that second goal there, Carl?
I was muted. No, Andrew's sentiments is right. I think the movement was, for us, brilliant, and that's what we need. We need a mobile centre forward. This is why, I hate to say this, but this is why Giroud doesn't work in our team, because Giroud's too static. And if we want people that's going to run on beyond the ball, people that, you know, a long ball, well, Ozil we will find, and Alexis can find with a long ball. So I think that Drew's absolutely correct. You need to play a mobile centre forward up front. And it's just really weird, like what you said, the Everton players just seem to stop. Very, very weird. Just almost like they were already queuing up to go on holiday. But, you know, it worked for us. And I'm happy we got the second goal. And at that point, still ecstatic because we were 2-0 up. Liverpool were still drawing and we were firmly in the top four. But sadly, it wasn't to be.
Yeah, I had no clue. You see this a lot from other teams as well. Just like, how do you not play through the whistle at all? Like, don't stay. You put your arm up if you want, but continue playing. Because it really sort of paid off for us there, and I was really happy. And of course, Welbeck again sort of involved in the play. Whether you want to give him full credit for the assist, I think he got technical credit for the assist on the first one because he touched it. He actually tried to hit it towards goal on that one, and it went straight back. But I think it's just really, really good to see sort of us not give up on a play, continue to push through, and then of course Sanchez slotting home. And at two nil now, you're down 10 men. You've got your insurance goal, which I think was key moving into it, because first half ended. Obviously, we found out that the Ben Dippers had got to pull the goal back, and we all thought, all right, activate Agent Chambers now, make the call, Arson. And so we come out in the second half, and then I think word started to get around that Liverpool scored pretty quickly after their halftime ended, and in the second half. And that's when Gabriel went down. It looked really bad. It's one of those things where, he was making a tackle, but it's not actually the contact from the tackle. It looks like his leg sort of got caught up under him, and his knee just sort of bent a little too far back there. Really unfortunate. Hope he can make a recovery from it there. But at that point, Carl, I'll come back to you on this one. Were you worried at all having, like, bringing Pear on? Did Everton seem like they were ever going to sort of pull it back at that point, in your opinion?
If they were smart, you would have thought that Lukaku would have been told to stay on Mertesacker. But they didn't. And why? If it was me and I was the manager of Everton, my instruction to Lukaku would have been just target Mertesacker, because he hasn't played all season. That's his first bit of action all season. So you're thinking to yourself, why didn't he do that? But to our luck, they didn't. So that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Everton never really threatened. There was a bit of a wobbly situation for about 10 minutes in the second half, but they never seemed like a real threat. Lukaku had a header that he put over the bar, and there was a few shots that went wide, but it was never, watching the game, I was never worried. Like, it was never a worry for me that they were ever going to come back in. But then, obviously, we'll probably talk about it now, the penalty situation, which was just, again, stupid. Just there's nothing but stupidity. And I don't know why. It almost seems like a panic setting. And this is what I'm talking about. In the 10 minutes that we just sort of, they were on top a little bit. They were attacking us. And then we just sort of panicked. It just really, really weird why shit like this happens to us all the time.
Yeah, it's one of those things, especially with 10 men, we just kept attacking. And I was like, why? We're just leaving so much space for him. And I know Cech had some really good saves as well in here. And so that was, I mean, that again, you know, he's worth some points for us there. And I know people slate him because penalties or whatever, but he's still a really good keeper. So yeah, really did well for us there. I'm gonna come on to Andrew first, and then I'll let Carl get on this. Ashley Williams was on a yellow and just blatantly sort of tripped Aaron Ramsey. I'm not gonna give my opinion yet. Go, Andrew. How lucky were they to not be down to 10 men at that point?
Oh boy. fairly lucky, but I think, okay, I'm going to preface this quickly before people jump on my ass. I'm not defending Michael Oliver, but I'm saying I'm looking for another point. I think his standpoint was, just because he's on a yellow, that does automatically mean make every foul after his yellow a second bookable offense. I think that's where maybe he was coming from in his decision making. But however, then you then have to ask, why was he going to call Ashley Williams over if he wasn't going to produce a second yellow? And then he sort of changed his mind halfway through. Maybe he talked to the linesman. Maybe he got convinced out of it. I really don't know. I think on any given day, you could have seen him send off easily. But also, depending on the ref, they'll take that same stance. Just because he's committed a foul doesn't make a yellow. Not every blatant trip is a yellow. We've seen many blatant trips over many years of football not being given as a bookable offense. So I think maybe that's where he's coming from. I personally thought it probably should have been a second yellow, but I could probably see why it wasn't given. But again, it just speaks to the fact that Everton were very, very vulnerable with their center backs. Both were on yellow cards. And I think that just showed how much trouble we were giving them with that fluidity in the final third, especially, when we were attacking them. It gave them nightmares. But yeah, no, I think they probably should have been down 10 men. But I don't think it's some sort of conspiracy. I don't think Michael Oliver's trying to give everything the benefit of the doubt every time against us. I just think that's where he was coming from. But I would probably have sent him off.
Gotcha. Carl, your thoughts on that, on the Ashley Williams challenge there?
It should have been a second yellow. And I understand what Drew's saying about not every single challenge is after you've been brought to a yellow card offence. But that was because, I can't remember what play it was, he was away. He was away and running. If Ashley Williams didn't trip him up, he was clear. So therefore, I don't understand why he wasn't given it. Me personally, I'm not as diplomatic as Drew. I think the referee bottled it. I genuinely do. And I think this is what me and you were talking about before we started. Players surrounding referees. And now it's a gentlemanly thing not to do it. I understand, you know, Arsenal are commended, well, not commended, but, you know, everyone says, Arsenal don't do it, they're nice players, you know, we're a nice club. But if every team does it, and they've got away with it today, you think if that was Granit Xhaka, you think he really wouldn't have got a second yellow? Granit Xhaka's off, because our players won't be there to defend our other players. I can't remember what game it was this season, where I think another team, they surrounded one of our players, I think it was Theo Walcott. He was squaring up to someone, and not one of our players ran to back Theo Walcott. Not one. And I think at about 15 seconds in, Coquelin ran over. And I can't remember what game it was, but that just shows sort of the mentality, how our players are not there to stand up for one another. We should be surrounding the referee. Every flipping team, Chelsea have been doing it for years. Man United have been doing it bloody for donkeys since Paul Durkin, like that ginger referee. That's how long they've been doing it, and they've been getting away with it since Keane and Scholes and Beckham. I remember one game that they chased the referee because I think he gave a penalty against Man United. And that just shows they've been doing it for years and getting away with it. And I understand that, you know, just because one team's doing it, everyone else shouldn't be doing it. But if everyone in the league is doing it and getting away with it, and we're the only team not doing it, then what does that say to you? You know, we're not there to fight for each other. We don't fight for each other, because that game, I can't remember what game it is. I'm sure it's on the radio with Chris, and Chris could remember. But, you know, we should be there backing up each other. Yeah. We should be there. If another team is trying to square up to one of our players, why is our whole team not there trying to back them? That's camaraderie. That should happen. But unfortunately, with Arsenal, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I do think we did see a little bit of it today, but not to the extent I think other teams do it. I in terms of a second yellow, yes, it's a second yellow. My problem that I have is I think he did. I don't think he was going to pull him over to give him a red. I think what he was going to do is he was going to pull him over to chat with him and say, "Hey, anything else?" And you're off. My problem is, whether you're on one yellow or two yellows, if it's a yellow card offense, it's a yellow card offense. And you can't adjudicate the game any differently based on previous actions. If it's a yellow card, it's a yellow card. If it's not a yellow card, then it's not a yellow card. It doesn't matter if he already has one, if he's already booked, if he's not on one. I have a real issue with the consistency there of well, he's already on a yellow, I'll let that one go, but I'll have a stern talking to him with like, no, shut your fucking mouth and show him the yellow, because it's a yellow card offense. Anyway, moving on from that, and I think we all agree that Michael Oliver had a decent first half. The second half, a completely different Michael Oliver showed up, and it's the see you next Tuesday that we all know he's capable of being. And that's all. I dropped my quota for C-bombs on the last radio show that I was on. So I don't want to go too far in there. Now let's sort of the next big event that happened in the game. Nacho, just with some really poor defending and mistiming the ball, hits his hand. It's a pin. And at this point, did you guys, Carl? I'm going to come right back to you on this one. Do you guys feel it at all? Did you guys start to think like maybe this could be the turn of something that could end up very badly for us when Lukaku put that in? Or was it just like one of those freak things that you thought, all right, let's just move past it and get on? I think somebody on Twitter was all like, it's not a handball because his hand was moving backwards and it wasn't hand to ball. But still, in the box, anytime your hand is sort of away from your body like it was, I can see that given. But your thoughts on the Nacho handball?
It was ample. You know, let's not look if you're very tinted glasses right now. It was just poorly timed, panic stations. You know, the red button was definitely hit, and unfortunately, we should have done better, and we didn't. And it's just Arsenal defending. You know, it happens all the time, and I say this all the time. It does. We under a bit of pressure, and it's almost like we run around like headless chickens because we don't know what to do. We don't have that person on the pitch, and maybe Koscielny does it, who just calm players down and just be like, stop, calm down, keep the ball for 5 minutes and just pass it around. And I do, if you remember back to the Bayern games, plural, as soon as Koscielny went off, we conceded all them goals. And you know, that's a lot to be said. But you know, as soon as the penalty was given and Lukaku scored, it was literally like, Arsenal, please don't do what you usually do and concede straight away. You could just tell Everton were on that drive to go forward, but luckily we sort of composed ourselves and we didn't go full panic stations, and we were composed, and I think that's the word. A word probably was had on the pitch, just to slow it down, calm down. Let's just keep the ball for a while and just take the sting out of the game. You know, we were winning, so there's no need to go full gung-ho. I know Arsenal only know one way, and that's forward, but there was no need for us to go full gung-ho, and we were able to just keep the ball for a little while and just compose ourselves and just take the sting out of the game. You know, why go from 50 and just bring it down to second?
Yeah, Davies is saying that it was he believes it was holding. From what I saw on TV was and even Lee Dixon and Graham Lasso were saying that it was Nacho or holding. Either way, I think it was a flat pin, definitely. Well taken pin, as well as even check finally guessed the right way there. Drew, any thoughts on the pin? Any different opinions here?
No.
Like, I'm just wondering.
No, but from I mean, if you're gonna go, and everyone talks about it, if you're gonna make a challenge in the box with this in the air, if you can try and bring it down with your chest, whatever have you, the first thing you say is you don't stick your arm out when you're doing it. And it, I mean, it's blatant. He tries to pull it back in time, but he's already damned himself just by sticking it that far out in the first place. It's stone cold handball. I mean, there's nothing more you can talk about. It just is what it is, and it's just like the Koscielny challenge. It was just a split second moment of brainlessness that it didn't cost us in the end, but you know, you just have to wonder what you're doing. It's just one of those things. But yeah, no, it's a clear penalty. So
yeah. So 2-1 now, and at this it went to 2-1, and I sort of felt at this point that everybody was just sort of playing to just get to the beach and next month, right? It was just sort of like, all right, let's just go through the motions. Let's nobody get hurt. We've seen what already happened to Gabriel. I think everybody was a little more weary there. But then we also did see a couple of interesting challenges, specifically from Everton players. Morgan Schneiderlin was one of them, who was also on a yellow card. Again, we've already mentioned the ref. But the next event that I felt was of consequence was Sanchez coming off, because right before he came off, he was holding his hamstring. Drew, I want to come to you on this one. Iwobi comes in for him. He comes off holding his hamstring, goes straight down the tunnel. Should we be worried for next week, or do you think that's just because we've seen him sort of do this, especially over the last couple of weeks? Should we be worried that we may not have our biggest goal scorer? And I know people slate him for giving the ball away, but the fact of the matter is he has produced results for us this year. You may not like necessarily the way he goes about getting that end result, because he can be sloppy with the ball at times. Not ever going to deny that. But he is our biggest goal threat. And do you think without him next week that we would have a chance?
No. Simple as that.
All right, well summed up. All right. No, go ahead.
Everyone's been talking about the last couple of weeks, you know, the boys on the radio show. I'm sorry, the podcast talked about it. It's just he's a player we've been missing for a while. He's an X-factor player. He always tends to pop up with big goals. He's always winning, trying to make something happen. You know, his work rate, he is up with the ball, but how hard he works for the amount of goals that he scores, the amount of goals that he does provide. He's a very much an all-action sort of lead by example. I'm going to throw the banner down and everyone come with me kind of player. And I think in the cup final, you want some of his personality in it. And without him, I just don't see how we're going to replace everything he brings. It's not just the goals. I think it's just everything else. But he's a physical anomaly. How many times have we seen him pull up with an injury that would keep other players out the next week, but he's already playing and giving 100%. So whether that's detrimental term or not, long term remains to be seen. But it wouldn't surprise me if he was declared fit to play in a couple of months, considering that is the FA Cup final. But it also just the fact that he's now, you see him now multiple matches now recently, you know, holding his hamstring. You know, it's the amount of physical pressure he puts himself under because of how hard he does work. You know, sometimes it can backfire from a physical standpoint, but. I think he'll end up being okay, but I mean, I'm hoping because I just don't see us have, first of all, I don't think we're going to win anyway. And I seem a bit defeatist, but I think Chelsea are just a better team. But without Sanchez, I think we don't have any chance at all. I think we have a chance to beat him. Both him and Ozil have shown up that they have in the past weeks. I think without Sanchez, I don't think anyone can replace him. I think then it's too much pressure on Ozil's shoulders. And sometimes he doesn't show up in big matches when that happens. He's a player that we need, not just next weekend, but moving forward. I think if we lose him in the summer, I think we're completely screwed. So,
right. Any issues going into that game with Sanchez, you think, Carl? You think he's going to, even if he knows he's leaving at this point, you think he'll still tough it out because he wants to win that trophy?
Almost definitely. The guy just wants to play football, and that's all he wants to do. So if we can get him on the football pitch, I don't care what sort of horse tranquilizers you need to give that guy to make sure that he gets into that football pitch, because unfortunately, and he won't be our problem next season. You know, let's face it, he's not going to, I very much doubt he's going to stay. I think it's probably 20% chances he stays. So get him on that pitch any way you can, and even so, he's got the whole summer. So even if you have to wrap him up in cotton wool for the week and give him whatever painkillers you need to give him throughout the week to get him through the game, he's got the whole summer. That there's no Copa America this year, or this summer at least, so he can have a good 5-6 weeks off. And if by some miracle he does stay next season, then he's got, just tell him to rest. If he doesn't stay, then he's someone else's problem next season. But we need him in that final. I don't think we've got that big of a chance of winning against Chelsea. Again, like Andrew, I'm not being defeated, just being a realist. But at the same time, our chances are improved with him in the team.
I love the realism there. I think we can beat any team in the world on any given day. And I'm hoping that any given day is next Saturday at 12:30 Eastern Standard Time in the U.S.,
I think you've got a case of the carpenters.
Uh-oh. So I don't know about that. But
why didn't we beat Palace? Why didn't we beat West Brom? Why didn't we beat Leicester at home? Why didn't we beat Liverpool? Why didn't we beat Chelsea? Why didn't we beat all these teams?
The same rule applies for them. On there's enough talent, and you can have such an off day, and we're going to come on to some of those defeats here a little later as well. But I think my issue with Sanchez is more how he berates other teammates, and he's not while he puts his flag in the ground and says follow me, the other times when he's not necessarily doing that and he berates them, he loses that credibility as a leader on the pitch. And it could possibly create some resentment with other teammates. That's sort of my only thing. But he's our best player, and we gotta hopefully have him on the pitch there. Let's talk about, and this is gonna make somebody. And I will before I go into this, I will say Jason Davis was right. It was holding. Even Twitter replays showed Rob holding, and the Twitter caption says Nacho Monreal. So, Jason Davis, all due apologies for claiming it was something else there. And I'm about to make him really happy again because there's been a guy in the number 8 shirt who's been as invisible as the last guy in the last season who wore the number 8 shirt was, and that was Aaron Ramsey. And that's just a little dig at you, Jace. I'm kidding. He's not been invisible. But the 91st minute, a nice curler from him from just inside the 18 sort of sealed the victory for us. Carl, Aaron Ramsey of old coming back in at just the right time. What's going on here?
Do you know what? I'm going to have such a dig at Jason right now. What do you mean the Aaron Ramsey of old? That he had one good season and we're talking about the Aaron Ramsey of old. So you're talking about the Aaron Ramsey of the 2013-2014 season, because every other season has been adequate to say best. I love you, Jason. I do, you know, one Aaron Ramsey and all that. But no, where was that all season? You know, we're talking about, everyone's going to gloat about, oh yeah, it was brilliant. And do you know what? Let me not take nothing away from that goal. Absolute worldie. Why is it that we always score good goals on the last day of the season? All the time, where we always score these worldies on the last game of the season. But, you know, let me take nothing away. Absolute brilliant goal. But why can't he produce that on a wet Wednesday in February? Why is it taking the last game of the season on a nice sunny day to produce that? Absolutely brilliant goal. And I can't take nothing away. You know, you look at them and you look at that goal and you literally say to yourself, this is why people love you. But at the same time, it's the same reason why people hate you, because you have the ability to do that. Absolutely brilliant goal. But why can't, I'm not saying that you should score a worldie every single week, because that's impossible. No one does that. But why the fuck can't you do that all the time? Or why can't you produce that more than once a season? Yes, he was injured and he was played, as Jason said in the group, he wasn't played in a very good formation. But I expect more from Aaron Ramsey. I genuinely do, because he's, what, probably the best midfielder we've, best central midfielder we've got, between him, Xhaka and El Nene. If Jack comes back, you know, you got to think of Santi. Would he ever play for us again? Who knows? But at the same time, you have to think to yourself, Aaron, you need to produce more. I just want more from him. And no, we shouldn't expect, you know, worldies from him every week. And I'm not saying that at all, but I just expect more from him. And doing that once a season for me is not good enough. And you saying that Aaron Ramsey of old, it's really not, because he's had one good season. Sorry, Jason. I do love you, Jason.
I knew my Aaron Ramsey of old would get in there as well. I'm sure Davies is just ranting right now. He's too mad to type at the moment. My whole thing with Aaron Ramsey, and I think the new formation definitely suits him well. And while he may not be scoring at the pace that he did in his best season, I think his movement from the midfield into attacking areas has been one of the driving forces in our turn in form. And that's something that's really hard to quantify. It's hard to judge movement, but I think he's dragging players out of position, creating space for other players, especially in this new formation. I think it really suits him. So
definitely, because he's one of the only players that will run on beyond the ball.
No, absolutely. And especially when you look at some of his best seasons with us, when he has scored the most, it's been typically when he's been making those runs, and I'm going to get slated for this because obviously I'm just a Giroud shill, but it's been when Giroud's been able to hold the ball up with his back to goal and let Ramsey run onto those. That's what made him that season. I really feel like having, you know, him up there and with Ozil, and then whether it's Welbs or whether it's Giroud, and I still think we should keep Giroud because I think he's the best hold up center forward in the world at holding up play, and he just hasn't had enough consistency on the pitch this year to really gain some form.
But Jason, sorry, just one thing. You're saying he's the best center forward to hold up play, but who runs beyond him? So what's the point of having that person? It's not his fault. No, it's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
But what I'm saying is, why have that sort of player in your team if it has to no effect to the way we play? Because no one runs beyond him.
I think some people try to. It's just we don't time it correctly all the time. And the other thing that I also dislike about it is the fact that whenever we have Giroud in, we try to play through the middle so we can hold up instead of necessarily trying to use his height because he is – better than most people give him credit for in the air, and we can't put those crosses in. But a player like you put Ozil and Ramsey and Giroud sort of in that middle spot, and you can have Ramsey running on, and we've seen what we can do there. We've all seen the highlights and the replays, and we can see that. And it's just, I think in that situation, it's having to fit Sanchez in, who wants the ball at his feet more. I think that sort of that goes against Giroud. And if he leaves, I'm not going to blame the guy at all. But obviously Giroud shill, and it does help to have that because we've seen it what it did for him a couple weeks ago when he grabbed two goals. I think having the option, that's what I like, having the option of whether we can have that everybody just running in at pace, and you can bring on Theo Walcott or Iwobi or Danny Welbeck. I would love to mention Lucas Perez, but it seems he's been killed by Wenger, so it's really tough to bring him into that argument. But having a player like Giroud, especially when a guy like Aaron Ramsey is on form, that is when we've seen the best of both of those players. And I think we've been lacking that some. But seeing Ramsey now get forward again in a different formation has really been the key there to his sort of form. And I'm really happy that he got a goal today. So, Andrew, any thoughts just on the Ramsey goal or any of the other BS that me and Carl just chatted about?
No, I mean, as you guys say, I think that goal is what Ramsey is capable of. But considering that was his first goal in 28 matches, I think it is the other side of the coin of the argument is where was this 28 matches ago? And I think that Dom popped up in the chat just before and saying, you know, you have to say that when Ramsey was shit in large parts of the season, other players were indeed shit as well. And that's all very true. But I don't know. I just feel like for him personally, I think we're not getting enough out of him. I think he's been a bit better with this formation again. For me, I still think the jury's still out on three at the back and what we're supposed to do next season. But I don't know. For Ramsey, I think he's – I mean, everyone said it in the Euro when he was performing for Wales, where was this Aaron Ramsey for Arsenal all these years, bar the one? But you do have to say that Wales play a different brand of football. He has a different role for Wales. You know, it's a different circumstance. I would maintain that if Ozil wasn't at the club, I think Ramsey would be in Ozil's position, and then you would see better performances out of him. Because I do think that Ramsey, despite his engine, I think Ramsey, you know, he came up as a 10 at Cardiff. That's why Sir Alex Ferguson wanted him. He's never gotten the chance at 10 for us. He's more mobile than Ozil. I think he's more direct. Despite Ozil's brilliant run in the box for the third goal, I think you see what Ozil's capable of, but on the balance of it, Ramsey is a different type of player than those. I think maybe you would get a different Aaron Ramsey with a different end product more consistently if his role was changed. And maybe that's what this formation maybe gives him, and we get to see next year. But no, I think that's just about it for what you guys were talking about. So.
Gotcha. I think it's all kicking off about Alexis in the chat group now. Let's keep it civil, everybody. Let's keep it civil. Just want to say hello to a couple of people. Obviously, Danny is in there, the GFP. Jason Davis is in there as well. Good to see him. Boyton Dio is in there as well. Got a couple of questions from him. There's Phil Weaver as well, who Phil Weaver gives a shout out to Petr Cech for being man of the match. I can't necessarily argue with that. I think he made some really good saves for us. You know, obviously people are still going to slate him all the time because he's not saving penalties, but at what point are you supposed to save it? Like, I mean, seriously. Looks like Sophie is in there. Hello, Sophie. How are you? Obviously, the Aussie heartthrob Dominic Nusky is in there as well from Canada. Hello, Dom. And then no nickname required also in there. So hello to everybody. Go ahead and start to put your questions in here for us as we start to sort of slowly wind this thing down. I don't want to take too much of your Sunday here and let you guys get on to thinking about making travel plans to, you know, Trabzonspor next season. Turkish and Kazakhstani seasons as we are in Europa. I just want to talk briefly, guys, on a couple of different players. And I want to start with the largest group of them. I just want sort of each of you to the English core, right? So we have, you know, in there you've got Wilshire, who's coming back from loan. You've got Ramsey, Gibbs, Theo, Ox. Who do you think next season is the most vital to keep at this point? And I'll send that over to Carl first, and I'll move over to you, Drew.
In midfield?
Anywhere.
Okay. I answered this question with Chris a while ago. So what I'm going to get up the whole squad and see who we should keep. Okay, Ospina, should we keep him? No, I don't think we should, because I think Chessy should come back and I think Czech should be number two and I think Ospina should play. Chessy should play and Czech should be the number two. So Matthew Debussy, he's not going to stay. Kieran Gibbs, would I keep him? No. Per Mertesacker, would I keep him as a player? No. As a coach? Yes. Gabriel, no. Koscielny, yes. Carl Jenkinson, he's gone. Bellerin, yes. Mustafi, yes. Monreal, yes. Holding, yes. So those are that's the defenders. Ramsey, would I keep him? Yes. Ozil, hopefully he does sign, and I would keep him, yes. Chamberlain, hopefully he does sign. Santi, it all depends on his injury. Because I'm hoping that we're not going to be one of the ones where if he's had a setback and he comes back in in November, we're holding up to November. Then there's another setback. And for me, that's taking up a squad position because we're going to register in the Premier League. So that's taking up a position in the squad that we can give to someone else or buy someone else. So I'm not too sure. Xhaka has to stay, yes. Coquelin, no, I wouldn't keep him. Sorry, Chris. I genuinely would not keep Francis Coquelin. I think we can get better than him, 100%. Elneny, yes, I would keep him. And then he's talking about strikers. Alexis, would I keep him? I would keep him. Whether he stays or not, we don't know. Lucas Perez, I don't know if he knows, he's even alive or in the country. Who knows? Giroud, I wouldn't keep. Theo Walcott, I don't know. This formation is not made for Theo Walcott. So it all depends on what formation we play next season because he hasn't had a sniff in this formation in the slightest. Danny Welbeck, I'd keep him. And Alex Iwobi, would I keep him? Yeah, I would because I think he's got a part to play in this team.
Drew, go ahead.
I mean, do you want me to go through every single player like Carl just did? Or
Go ahead.
I'd prefer not to. I think Carl handled it. I think there's only a few players we have to really consider. I think for me, I think Walcott has to go. I even if you go back to four at the back and you switch the formation back to what we've been playing for the majority of the season, I still don't think Walcott really suits it. I think it speaks volumes that he scored X amount of goals this year, but he still can't get a game right now. I just feel like the project is over. I thought the project failed a couple of years ago. I don't think small purple patches of form is a good enough reason to keep him. I think he needs to go. I think Giroud should probably leave. I don't necessarily hate the guy, but even it doesn't matter the formation or approach you play. I just don't think he genuinely suits us effectively enough. He does score some brilliant goals, obviously, and it's not his goal scoring record that I hate. I just feel like he's too immobile for the best brand of football we can play and should be playing. I mean, I don't think he's going to be necessarily happy with being a choice off the bench for the majority of matches either. So I think you should have to let him go. I would like Ox to stay, but the issue is, and you can't fault him for this, he wants to be given the trust of being a first choice on the team sheet with whoever he plays. And if we stay with three at the back, then he has to contend with Bellerin, who is more of a natural defender than he is for the right wing, for the right wing back role. And then if you go back to a back four, you know, and then we do you allow him to play on the right? Do you want to play him in the middle? And, you know, Wenger keeps banging on about how he wants to see Ox as a central player. Why isn't he trying to play Ox through the middle more consistently? You know, so I think that questions are going to be around there. And if he wants to play, he has to leave as well. I mean, those are the only questions I have for right now. But obviously, you want to keep Sanchez. Obviously, ideally, you want to keep Mesut Ozil and try to find a way to utilize him more effectively. And at the moment, his performances have increased. But again, I think, albeit it's been against defenses who have been incredibly poor, so you never really know how it's going to go on. But someone just put up in the chat before that it's been rare that we've made more than three or four changes in the summer. So completely wholesale changes, despite the amount of money we're touted to be having to spend this summer, I don't see a massive shakeup in the first team. I think we need a few signings in, but I don't see like a clear out of 8 to 10 players like some people have been talking about. So all I know is that I guess anything could happen in the summer. It's whether we do the business or not, it's going to be the question moving forward.
But Andrew, you've got a massive war chest, so why would you have a massive war chest if you're not going to spend it?
Carl, please.
Is anybody actually – I would actually love it if there was a room at, you know, the Emirates or wherever that was just – it was just a locked room, and inside it there was a legitimate chest of money. That would probably be the best thing I could actually think of. And I'm like, no, we have a legitimate war chest, guys. It's legit. It's an actual war chest. Come look at this. Anyway, sorry. Just enough of my ramblings there.
30 AD, that actually happened.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So we've been on there. We're in Europa League. I know Sophie is quite sad and bummed out. Today's really bittersweet because I'm like, yeah, all right, we got to win. It's 3 points. And then I think there's no more chances in this season to get 3 points, which is another sad point. And then the other one is the fact that we're just going to go to some really crap places next year and play against on crap pitches, against crap teams. For a second-rate trophy, and it's going to take our focus off the league. So, just real quickly, Andrew, I'm going to start with you on this one. If you were the manager of the club, would you put any emphasis on Europa League, or would you put all the emphasis on the league?
Oh man, that's a difficult question, to be honest. I feel like, I mean, we're so used to getting dumped out of Champions League in a round of 16, usually in embarrassing circumstances. On paper, you could say that this team is good enough to win Europa League or at least make a much deeper run, but at what cost? You know, I feel like, whether you like Mourinho or not, I think the fact that he showed that he put all his eggs in one basket this season and with a X amount of matches to spare, he was saying that this isn't my one concern. You know, winning Europa League is now my concern. You know, he was consigned to not getting a Champions League spot, so he's going to try and do it via European competition. For me personally, I'd rather have a bigger go at the league, and because I think if you really focus on Europa League, that could potentially damage your run of results in the league. For me, I think the league still has to be number one, but I'm not going to say that we – and also you have to look at the Europa League as a way that you can maybe give some of the younger kids a way to play as well. You can start – give Iwobi a little bit more starts, you know, maybe try Ox to the middle. The guys in the pod said before maybe you could even test out Chambers holding through the middle at center back in some of those matches against maybe some of those smaller sides. But I still think the league's got to be priority, but I still think if we rotate the squad well enough – then I think you should still have a crack at Europa League as well. But I think it's all going to come down to man management and who's fit and available, if injuries are an issue, things of that we don't know about yet. But I think if the squad is fit, or the vast majority of it is fit for the majority of the season, I think you have to rotate and actually have a go at both. But for me, I think if I had to pick, I'd pick the league.
Carl, your thoughts on Europa League prioritization for next season?
I think the league has got to be the priority 100%. You know, I said at the beginning of the season that I thought Chelsea were going to win the league because they had no European competition and they could just focus on the league. I really do think that this season, or next season, sorry, we need to focus on the league. We have to. And I think Dom just put in the chat, you know, unlike the Champions League, we can rest some of our players because the level of competition in the Europa League is not as good as the Champions League. So we should be able to rotate throughout some of our European sort of games because we've got to try and win the league and we've got to be better than fifth next season. You know, we've just got to get up that table. And it's not even about coming higher than Spurs, or I don't really care if we come higher than Spurs. That doesn't bother me. We need to win the league next season. We've got to challenge at least. And even if we challenge, we've got to be in and about the running in the Aprils, because being out of the league by January, February, it's just not good enough. It really isn't. So we have to be able to, and I'm not saying throw the Europa League, because at the end of the day, I hate saying this, but because if Man United win the Europa League, which is a possibility, they're in the Champions League. So they're six right now, but they're going to be in the Champions League if they win the Europa. So we have to go for it. But I'm not saying throw the league, not by a long shot, not at all. But at the same time, I think the league has to be the main focus, because for too many years now, we haven't challenged. Even last year, yes, we came second, but it was a full second. We, you know, let's be honest, we should have come second. We didn't really deserve it, but at the same time, we still did it. But we're still 10 points off the champions. This season, I don't know how many points it was, more than 20, I think. And it's just not good enough. It really isn't. We need to do better in the league. And if Arsene Wenger is to stay on, which, let's be honest, he probably will, we need to do better, 100%.
I'd chime in with that just real quick. I think going back again to the pod, Chris just mentioned something that's incredibly valid. When teams start to miss out on Champions League qualifications through the league for 2, 3, and 4 seasons, it becomes incredibly difficult to get back into it, and then they potentially go into free fall with league results. So I think that's why, for me personally, I would rather target the highest league finish possible. That doesn't mean we shouldn't give it a go in Europe, but I mean, if you start missing out on Champions League for multiple years, your results start to slip in the league. It becomes hard to get back in, and it also becomes harder to attract better players, no matter how much money you have available, because, as we've seen, unless you have the pull of the Man Uniteds, of, you know, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona, you can't get those top players into your club, no matter how much money you offer them, because all the top players want to play in Champions League. That's just a fact. So the league has to be the number one focus, with the caveat that you still rotate and use the squad and still try to make a push in Europa League as well. But the league's got to be the priority for me.
I agree, because I think player recruitment is going to be very, very hard this season, or next season, when we look at it. I truly do, because, like you said, we haven't got the pull of Man United. And let's be honest, we're not going to offer the millions and millions and millions that other teams can. I mean, Pogba, however you look at it, he still went to Man United and they were in the Europa League. Now, Pogba could have gone to any team in Europe, but maybe only Man United were in for him, but he could have gone to any team in Europe and he went to Man United because they offered him the most money. And that's what you need to do. And unfortunately, I don't, even as big as our war chest is, I don't think that we're going to offer the millions and millions of players because we don't have the pool. It's like Chris said at the beginning of the season, you know, we went for Mbappe last season and we couldn't get him. Now, when do you ever think that Arsene Wenger could not get a player like a 19-year-old guy in France? And we was in, like Drew said, I'm using the Champions League, and now you're in the UEFA Cup, and the guy is probably now worth 80 to 90 million in today's money. Are we really going to play that? Have we got the pulling power to say, you know, yes, we're going to have to pull Mbappe from a Champions League team to the Europa League, and, you know, all this stuff like, oh yeah, but it's Arsenal and, you know, he's playing in London and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't work anymore. That, you know, Arsenal do not have to pull to say we can just, you know, every team, every player wants to play in London and every player wants to play for Arsene Wenger and every player wants to play for Arsenal. We don't have that anymore, especially not being in the Champions League. It's going to be even harder.
Let's also not admit, like, let's forget that probably the last time Mbappe saw us win anything let's see, I mean, how old would he have been in 2003? No,
oh, 2003.
2003. Oh, we saw us win a league. Let's not even go back to an FA Cup. Let's talk about when we won the league. Let's would he just heard probably stories of Arsene Wenger. That's probably really all. And then Arsene Wenger's been this coach of a team that sort of struggled. That's the problem with a lot of this generation that's coming up is they don't quite understand the true greatness that Wenger brought. They hear all these stories, but they haven't seen it firsthand like a lot of our fans have. So it makes it a little bit harder there. So we're gonna go ahead and move into questions here, and we're gonna. I think we've covered the game, covered into going into Europa League here. I would prioritize the league, absolutely.
Can I just ask one question just before you ask the questions?
You can, yeah.
Do you think Arsene Wenger stays next season? Yes.
Yes. I think he does. I think he does. Not because I think.
I think the agreement's already in place. I think they're waiting on the FA Cup match to announce it.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't see him leaving, I think. If he was going to leave, what manager would have been available that we would have already spoken to come in and replace him on such short notice that can have the effect that we need with such?
Well, but that's the other issue is the fact that maybe he hasn't let anybody know if he wants to leave yet.
Yeah, possibly.
And the second caveat to that is how atrocious is that you were literally your selfishness as a manager of not knowing what you're able to do in your future is holding back the club that you love so much. Because you can't make your mind up, and that's my big frustration. We already should have had an announcement. We shouldn't wait for a good time or anything like that. You know, you make the announcement when you make the announcement, and you let it be what it is. And if fans complain, then fans complain, and fans are always going to complain no matter what because you can't make 100% of the people that support you happy all the time. But the fact that if it almost feels like a hostage situation at some point. Where again, this is only if he hasn't told anybody. I have a feeling that right now his mind's not made up completely. That's why it hasn't come out yet. But I do think he's here next year. I think that's where he's leaning, and I actually think he's probably got the contract. But yeah. If he has not said anything to anybody about yes or no, then that's a huge indictment upon him, and he literally is holding the club hostage at that point.
But what employee of a business is able to tell their boss/manager, I'll tell you if I'm going to stay or not?
It's Arsene Wenger. Ridiculous. Arsene Wenger.
That's not how business is run. Do you think you could go to your manager and your performance has been bad and you say to him, oh, I'm going to let you know if I'm going to work for you or not. It's just ridiculous.
But that's the situation we're in with him, and the power that he's gained is we have Stockholm syndrome.
So who's to blame? Is it Arsene Wenger? Is it the Bulls?
It's everything top to bottom. Yeah. Did you guys just see what Alpha put in the chat about Wenger told BBC that he said the fans and the hostile environment hindered the season? I think that's.
Let's hope he's not blaming the fans because
I honestly think he's got to be hopped up on a 1945 port or something because I think that's just. To actually say that, to think that, I don't know, it's been a rough season. I think fans are allowed to voice their discontent. But obviously, there are times when the fans have backed. I think when things have gone well, the fans supported. When things don't go well, the fans criticize. Sometimes it was, with a decent structure. Sometimes it was completely, like a headless chicken. But yeah. I think that's expected. I think sports fans are expected to and have the right to voice their concerns when things aren't going well. I think that's normal. And I think the fact that he would come out and say that. I don't even know what to say at that point. I really don't. But just briefly before we move on about who's to blame for this, I think everyone top to bottom is to blame. I mean, you can blame Wenger for a lot of things, but the other thing, and Jason and I can speak about this pretty effectively because obviously we're here in the States, is that Stan Kroenke is not an owner to put pressure on teams to succeed in regards to the things that they win. He's very much about the margins. He's very much about the bottom dollar, how much money he can take out of clubs to strengthen his portfolio. And Arsenal is the diamond of his portfolio. It allows him to do so much in regards to his other business ventures that he doesn't care. As long as he's making money, he doesn't care. And I think I know fans want him out, and I know that people are starting to bring signs for that. And I know there was a chant today. But when you look at it, there's no American sports fan in this country that who supports the Stan Kroenke franchise that actually likes the man, and there's constantly a voice of discontent with him, but he still states he doesn't care because he doesn't have to care. So if we're going to have to be stuck with him for a while, it's going to have to be whatever manager wants to come in after Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger himself has to bring the change at their level. If Kroenke's not going to put the pressure, the manager then has to put the pressure. And the fact that Wenger isn't putting enough pressure for us to get better results, then the blame has to then shift to Wenger as well. So
what changes next season? If
nothing changes, I think Sophie was just talking about it. If Wenger stays, it's hard to see anything change because history constantly repeats itself, and his history dictates that he's not going to change anything. That's the problem. It doesn't matter what players we bring in. Like, all credit to the man potentially for us switching to three at the back and it working it for late on in the season, but on the whole, what could possibly change?
The last two games, we've also reverted back to our old system.
Yeah, and we've read the same script every single season, literally verbatim. Start strong, fade in a certain part of the season, then when the pressure's off, we all of a sudden go on a run of form and magically squeak out Europe again. If that's then you have to look. That's just down to the manager at that point. You have to blame the players as well, obviously, but the players are being instructed or not instructed and playing a system that they're told to play. You know, some players have to be accountable for poor performances throughout the season. That's all well and good, but the manager does have to take a lot of stick for the same play playing out year on year. It's like going back with the same playbill to a play that's 30 years old and watching the same thing with the same cast. And that's the thing that's the frustrating part.
Danny, I'll tell you what, that Danny comes up with some quotes throughout the season, and those are cheat in our sort of league, because I bet he's won. I guarantee he's probably won, but he said something this season that's really stuck with me for the whole season, is that Arsene Wenger's been there so many years, and if all, you know, some of the playing staff has changed, and the coaching has changed, and the board has changed, and the only one ever present is Arsene Wenger, and nothing has changed since he's been there. We haven't won the league for so many years. So he's got, sometimes you've got to look back at yourself and think, it's got to be him, and he can't be that stubborn to think that it's not me. You know, everything around him has changed, but yet the same results still remain. So it's got to be him. And, you know, I truly agree with Danny. Everything around him has changed. But so why is he that stubborn that he can't think, well, I've got to change my tactics? When he's back to the wall, that's when shit changes. And that's why we now play with three at the back, because he knew he had to change something. We were that bad throughout the league, and our results were absolutely ridiculous. You know, leading into the Middlesbrough game, what we lost, like 5 out of 7 or something along them lines, or the only teams we'd beaten is non-league teams, which is just not good enough. So you think to yourself, had that been any other club in the Premier League, Arsene Wenger would have been fired. And I'm not talking about over the past sort of
years.
I'm talking, take away the last 10 years. Talk about this season. Had these results for any other club been exactly the same, Arsene Wenger would have gone.
Yeah. Of course, or any other big club in any other league, if this was the kind of season that they had, he would have been shown the door.
So. Yeah. And just to answer Gimli's question, we totally did not win. That's the reason why we didn't get top four. We didn't shoot enough. And I think it's just absolutely atrocious. We should shoot 20 times every game.
Every game. Also, now that I have both our good friend Lord Hillwood in the chat as well as Jason Davies, I must do.
You've muted yourself.
All right. Now I'm fully American here. Now I'm fully. Don't mind the sunburn.
This is why we have a bad day.
Oh, God. Just for Jason and Steve there. Okay, let's get into just some quick yes or no questions. I don't want to go too long again. Let's Benny Ogden. This will be for Andrew. Yep. Do you think we win the Premier League next season if Arsene stays?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Easy enough. Let's go to where was it at? Because this is actually a decent one, and I think a couple of us have put it in here. Carl, this is for you. Nats there asks, talk is that Arsene could be offered the director of football job. So it'd be a slightly different sort of title, but do you feel that it would be beneficial for the club if he sort of stayed around in some sort of directorial role for footballing sort of operations?
No, if he needs, he needs to leave the club totally, because if you think to yourself, he doesn't want to spend money as the manager. Like, you imagine him being totally control of the money and the manager going to him and saying, I want this player, this player, this player. He's going to be like, I'm not too sure, I can't afford it. So no, if he leaves, he needs to leave the club completely.
Or imagine Wenger taking up the quote unquote director of football position above the new manager. It'd be the same thing. Same thing again. Yeah. The whole mentality that he brings has to be chucked out of the club for any sort of change to be effective. So.
Agreed.
All right. So I agree with both of you on that, actually. Okay. Forza Football asks, far-fetched, but do you think with Tottenham Stadium move, we could get Harry Kane with a big enough offer? And would you guys, want him? Did you see him? Allegedly today, he was given the golden boot, and he goes, "It's not my boot size," and then gave it back. So he's a great goal scorer, he's a Spurs player, and he can fuck off. let's go with Boyton Dio asks, are we still in a transition season, or is this a fair representation of, he says Arsenal, but I'm just going to say Arsenal, because there's a possibly a term over in England as well, but in American sports, that you're only as good as your league position.
Pretty much.
And maybe this is actually just where we're at now. We can talk about breaks and you know, a poor loss or poor refereeing or whatever, but is this our level?
I think it all comes down to the business that's done. They made a point, Jason, probably on our field on NBC, that this is the highest points finish a fifth place team has had, where usually this point total gets you in second or third on average throughout the past however many years. And the fact that we had this many points and finished fifth tells you that you have to spend if you want to compete. And all the teams above us, as Danny just put in the chat, all the teams above us are going to spend. We have to spend if we have any realistic ambitions of trying to get back into the top four, maybe finish third, second, even challenge for first. There's no way you can do it. And if you look at the Premier League money this season, you get the same money for finishing fourth that you get for sixth. So we're getting 142 million. Liverpool are getting 142 million. United are getting 142 million. I think whoever finishes first gets 150. So the money won isn't that much less, even though we finished out of the CL places. We're not going to get Champions League money, but the money is there for us to spend. We have to spend. You have to spend to improve. And there's a lot of, you can look at a lot, maybe three or four positions in the first team that if you spend smartly, you improve the team. And you just have to go for it. I think this is why people were so angry about the Kolasinac deal. And as someone who's been watching the Bundesliga since 1995, I can tell you that Kolasinac is a very, very good left back. I think he's better than Nacho Monreal. He comes in, he actually improves the team. But people want to see money spent. So they're slagging off the deal because it was on a free. And they're trying to find excuses as to why we didn't spend money on a left back instead of getting one for a free. I think that's what the sentiment is. I'm all for spending money. But sometimes shrewd business is good, and that's shrewd business, but we do have to spend money to compete. And I think that if we don't, it's just, we're going to end up fifth or worse next season. It just has to happen.
And maybe, folks, maybe we can use the money we didn't spend on a left back to buy that quote unquote world-class striker we've always been looking for.
You saved 20 to 25 million. You saved 20 to 25 million. Now you can pad that on to 50 million.
Don't knock a deal because it's free. We never know the full circumstances of why the player never received it.
Holding was 10 million and John Stones to 50. Who's had the better season? Yes, okay, arguably, they have finished above us this season. But, you know, player for player, I think you can say that Rob Holding's had, quote-unquote, a better season than John Stones has.
Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree with that here. Jeffrey O'Hara has a question that he said, Ozil and Sanchez spent the lap of honor whispering to each other and ignoring the fans. What do the panel think they were discussing? And I'm going to put this for both of you. We're going to have Carl be Sanchez and Drew be Ozil because Drew loves German football. You get bonus points if you're in putting it in their accents. So what were those two chatting about? And go.
How does a Chilean speak? I have no idea. So I'm not getting any points, but I very much doubt they were discussing their futures on the pitch. That would be extremely stupid if they were, no matter even if you cover your mouth when you're talking. But no doubt, I believe that they have discussed their futures together. There's no doubt that them two haven't been on the phone to each other or met up in private and not said, "Are you staying? Are you staying? Are you going to go? Are you going to go?" Of course it's going to happen. That's 100% happening. Let's be honest. I think Sanchez is out the door. I'll be very, very honest. But people will say that he's limited places where he can go. Me personally, I'm in agreement with Chris. I honestly think that he goes to PSG. I think around sort of Europe, there's not many clubs that he can go to. You know, maybe Bayern Munich, PSG, or one of the top ones. He's not going to go to Real Madrid. He's not going to go to Barcelona. Where else is he going to go? If we sell, I would rather keep him than sell him to an English club and make his contract run out. I really would, because I could not imagine him turning up in a Chelsea shirt next season. I would be beyond pissed, absolutely beyond fuming. Ozil, I'm going to be probably in the minority now. I think there's a limited places where Ozil can go. I don't think he's as sought after as people think that he is. Maybe he goes to Bayern Munich. Is there anywhere in Spain that he can go to? No. Does he go, where in Germany does he go to? Does he go to Dortmund? Very much doubt it. Does he go to Leipzig? Are they big enough now to attract players like Ozil? I don't know. Does he go to, where else does he go? Does he go and play in France? Who knows? It obviously does depend on what happens with the Monaco squad, because if that squad is broken up, then they're going to have a lot of money and they're going to attract some players as well, definitely. But does Ozil want to play in a stadium that's 18,000, I want to say? But at the same time, you play in Monaco, you look at the taxes, he's not going to pay any tax, so every money that he earns is going to be his. So, but at the same time, I just don't think that Ozil is as sought after as people think. I don't know if Drew or you, Jason, think otherwise.
I think he's going to stay probably with us. I don't know quite where he would go at the moment, but we never know. We didn't think that he was going to fall to us when he did. So could be a surprise move out there, but I think he stays with us. I do think probably Sanchez is 50-50 if he leaves or stays. It's one of those things. I just hope we can get a good price for him and then make sure that we reinvest that money in the right player. So, yeah, I think that's going to sort of slowly wind it down for us. Last league game of the season. Let's play this here. Just a quick scenario. Let's say, you know, Kolasinac comes in, Sanchez goes out. Let's say we get a player of Sanchez's caliber into the team this year, and Ozil stays, and the squad stays similar to how it is now. Let's have a very early, because we love to do this in American sports. We love to predict stuff before we know absolutely anything about what players you're going to have, anything else with the other teams. We love to do this. So I'm making this very American. Drew, I'm going to start with you, with the scenario I just described. Where do we finish next season in the league?
Here's why, because you're saying you want to bring in another player of Sanchez's caliber. The problem is, I would challenge you to come up with three or four players who are as good as Sanchez offensively, but work as hard as he does off the ball, both in the final third and from a defensive standpoint. It's very difficult to replace that. And I don't think you can find anyone right now that'll actually do that. I think he's literally borderline irreplaceable at the moment. I think that's the biggest fear that I think most fans have currently. I think we'd be better off, I don't want to, but I think we'd be better off losing Mesut Ozil and keeping Alexis Sanchez. Getting Ozil off the books, giving Sanchez whatever he wants from that Ozil contract money. If you keep Sanchez, we're much better off than if we keep Ozil. I don't see us competing if he leaves. I really don't. I think it'd be very difficult. People want to bring someone like a Marco Reus in. I have my reservations about that, being someone who watches Dortmund quite a bit. Just players like that would help in certain circumstances, but on the whole, as an overall player, just not at the same level. I think it's just, that's the big worry right now, for sure. So I don't think Champions League will be happening unless big business. Yeah.
Carl, your thoughts on next season with a similar squad than we have this year?
Similar this year, I think fourth. The reason why I think fourth is that if Liverpool do progress in the Champions League, I don't think they'll be able to keep up. The style of football that they play, the intensity that they play, I don't think they'll be able to keep it up. And they will get tired and they will get injuries. Liverpool had no European football this season and they only managed to beat us by 1 point. So I think with an increased games, you know, yes, we're going to have exactly the same. And we're going to be probably in the worst position because we're flying to all deepest, darkest Europe and we're going to be playing Sunday, Thursday. But at the same time, we're used to playing two games a week. We're used to playing 2 to 3 games a week. Liverpool haven't been doing that. So I think next season, and even Chelsea to an extent, I'm not saying that Chelsea are going to fall off completely, but they're not used to this season. It's been almost a doddle for them. They played one game a week. It's all different when you start playing, you know, when you fly back in on a, you know, early hours of Thursday morning, then having to play Saturday lunchtime. It's all different. You're not going to have the maximum rest. Arsenal are used to the travelling. Yes, maybe the Sunday, Thursday thing may be different for them, but at the same time, we are definitely used to playing 10 games a week. So I think fourth, but we have to get a striker. I think our priority is definitely defender and striker. That has got to be our priority.
I'm actually going to leave this on a positive here, actually. I think next year, I think we'll finish as high as second.
What? You're mad.
I do.
You're mad.
Call me mad.
I told you,
I think we'll play some youth players in Europa League, and we'll focus on the league, and we can do. And I think we can sort of push on with having some rested players. I still don't think we'll win it because I don't think that Wenger has just that extra edge to sort of push on anymore. And I do still think he'll be here, but I think this team this year completely underperformed. It's the best team that we've had. Best team we've had in ages, and it was sort of the worst that I've seen us play in a long time. And folks, I've literally only had 2 beers today. I'm so completely sober that it's sad. I think we can come. I think we can put in a really good performance next season. The players have to. In my opinion, I want to shift some blame from the coach. The players have to take more responsibility for their performances on the pitch. We can blame the manager for making the wrong tactical decisions, but I feel with the talent we have in the squad, we should still absolutely be doing better than we are right now. Our players just need to grow some brass tacks and say, look, despite what this guy's doing or not doing, we know exactly what we need to do to win these matches, and we need to just go out and do it. And so that's where there is blame to go on the players. There's a lot of blame to go around everything. But you know what? I still think we can do it. We just got to have the right mentality, and I think we saw that in the last few weeks.
But Jason, so, this was meant to be our best squad for years. Remember at the beginning of the season, everyone said,
I've said that a lot. Gunnar Hollick said that, and I don't think anybody ever wants to argue with
that. We ended up worse than ever before.
And just because you have more talent, that doesn't guarantee you anything in this league. It guarantees you absolutely nothing with talent. Nothing. It's about mentality. It's about how smart you play these matches and how much you care. And if you can have all the talent in the world, but if you're not executing mentally, you're not focused game in and game out, which we were not, then you see what happens. You can have a lot of talent. You can still finish fifth or sixth. Let's not act like the United team that this year that they've had hasn't had more talent than they have had in years. Granted, I mean, we can all laugh at what they paid for that talent. I still think they're a somewhat talented squad. They finished below us. Granted, I don't think they're good enough to finish above us anyway. But talent doesn't mean anything if you're not realizing that talent's potential. And I think that's where we haven't. That's what we haven't done.
The person in charge is not putting them out in the correct way.
I completely agree with that, and at some point though, you got to look at some players and go, well, you're good enough. You're good enough to be on this team. You should be able to play, and find a way to fit in if you're that good. So they have to overcome an obstacle, but it's an obstacle that's overcomable, and they haven't done that either. So we got to blame Stan Kroenke. We're not going to talk about ownership. We're going to let them do that on the podcast this next week. I know it's been a hot topic. You guys can get your questions in to the Twitter feed for that. Please do that. We have to blame our ownership. We have to blame our board. We have to blame our manager, and we have to blame our players. And they all, to me, share equal blame because it was a failure on all aspects. Nobody did their part this season, and hopefully we can turn it around this summer. So I don't want to necessarily leave it on a negative because I do think there's a lot that we can take in going to next year. But again, we have to realize our potential. Let's hope that next season is a lot better in the league. We will have another show for you next Saturday. Hopefully, it will be a champagne showers for us as we're beating Chelsea at Wembley, lifting a record for Arsene Wenger. So let's not just completely act like the guy's never done anything for us. It would be his 7th trophy in the FA Cup, which would be the most of any manager ever. So that's definitely a big accomplishment. So let's hope that the players can come together and rally around and put in probably what would need to be our best performance of the season. If you have liked or disliked what we've done, please click a thumbs up or a thumbs down. I prefer a thumbs up just because don't be a jerk. I want to thank everybody in the chat box. I know there's a few of you. There's Inan Gunner is in there. Jimmy's a great guy. Let's see. 73295, who is always here. Thanks for joining us. Alpha has been in there. Medi has been in there. Stefan Selby that I see in there right now. Let's see. Who is it? Lazy Python I saw in there. Thanks everybody, not just for today, but for the whole season. For tuning in to us again. Next week, we will be here. Win, lose, or draw. As our good pirate host says, a big thank you as well to Carl and Drew for coming on today. Cheers, fellas.
Yeah, no problem.
Jason, you got to get your tits up. It's only reading it to see them.
You guys aren't prepared for that. I will also just a few more things before we go. One, please check out ABW Pro Clubs, which is our we're doing a 24-hour FIFA-thon on FIFA with Stefan Selby is leading that up. The tall blonde on Twitter, so check him out, is leading that up. We're trying to raise about £500 for the Macmillan Foundation for cancer research. So please go check that out. Any a pound, a dollar, 50 pence, $100, whatever you want to give, please check that out and give to us. All the information is there if you go to @ABW Pro Clubs, or you can just search ABW FIFA Thon on Twitter. Please check that out. I want to plug our blogs and the infamous OG Jeff Hollenfrun for the great job him and his guys do. And I know Drew's been blogging throughout the year, so a big shout out to them. So please go check that out, and as well as definitely check out this coming Thursday's podcast. As it's going to be, I don't quite know who's on. I'm sure somebody will tell you, or you can see it on Twitter here in a few days. But yes, absolutely. Please go check out atabergkamporterland.co.uk as well for all of that information. And absolutely thank you guys for joining us, because without this, I would just be an American wearing a tank top talking to a guy from England and a guy from New York. So yes, thank everybody for watching, and we'll see you guys next Saturday. Again, hopefully we'll be popping champagne showers and not crying tears of pain, as those blue chavs have sadly done something. But yes, thank you guys, and we're off for the next week. Y'all have a good one. They were pretty smart, but you got being right down to an art. You think you're a genius, you drive me up the wall. You're a regular original, a know-it-all. Oh, you think you're special. Oh, you think you're something else. Okay, so you're a rocket scientist. That don't impress me much. So you got the me much. Uh-huh.
heaven forbid, it should fall out of place. Okay, so you're Brad Pitt. That don't impress me much. So you got the looks, but have you got the touch? Now don't get me wrong, yeah, I think you're all right. But that won't keep me warm in the middle of the night. That don't impress me much. So you got a car that don't impress me much.